Oh my god, oh my god, oh my
Love
god.
Talk Radio.
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. Here we are. It's this is Charlotte Live. This is Dr. John. So glad for everybody to be back here. We're glad to have you there with us to listen, whoever you are. And I'm going to introduce my co-hosts. First of all, from Studio G in Greenville, South Carolina, Zach Beechler. Zach, what are you up to?
I'm in the car about home because I forgot that traffic sucks at night for some reason here in Greenville. I do not understand.
That's all right. We'll forgive you. I don't care what you say. I'm just glad you're here. Brady.
Always.
Brady, you're back from Des Moines, Iowa. You got power? Let me ask you that. Do you have power? Do you still have stuff in your fridge and it's cold? Yes or no?
Yep, nope, we're all taken care of. We got power back. And, wow, that's the game. We got power back. About 2 days long. Very fortunate compared to a lot of other friends and family around the area that were hit pretty hard. But we're doing okay. We're doing okay, but a lot of Iowa still not doing great. It's the worst of man should say, my man.
Yes, sorry.
All right, I'm going to ask both of you to talk a lot louder. It's hard to hear you, but we're glad that you're here.
Yeah, I saw a lot of
Zach,
the, yes.
You said you were excited to talk about this weekend's race. Start talking, buddy.
Well, real quick, I do want to say, as someone from the Midwest, I've seen a lot of, like, the craziness that Brady's talking about from family, friends, and all-around colleagues, so it's great to have Brady back. It kind of sucked doing a solo show. You know, me and John, we have a great chemistry, but John not knowing a whole bunch about racing, it's great to have him, but in all honesty, Brady, I'm glad you're back for this weekend because we have three races to really talk about. One we'll do a quick summary of, but a brand new racetrack, never raced in NASCAR. The only time NASCARs have quote-unquote been on this track are for SCCA races and or modified races in the 70s. We're talking about the Daytona International Road Course, the same road course with the added chicane that the 24 Hours of Daytona they run. It was something everyone was unsure of what was going to happen, especially with no practice and no qualifying. Everyone was going in blind this weekend, no matter who you were.
Oh, yeah, no, in all three races, you definitely had the expected thing was going to happen. Going on track, no prior experience, a lot of drivers there, especially experienced drivers in the truck series, suspension series where there's a lot of rookies. We knew a lot of drivers were going to mess up, miss chicane, miss corners. We saw a lot of that, but overall, very surprisingly, we saw clean racing for the most part. Of all that experience, and so you really got to take cast a lot of these drivers who really put on a good show. Not only that, but also just good time.
Yeah, overall, like there was four races. There was the Arkham Menards series on Friday night, the Xfinity on Saturday, Sunday we had a doubleheader trucks and cup series, and overall, I watched the ARCA race online. About a day later, about the right before the Xfinity race. And overall, that race, I'll sum it for you, it wasn't hectic. There was some great racing action. Michael Self has swept Daytona, getting both the road course and the super speedway win. And he did it not so much in a dominant fashion. He had to fight Ty Gibbs for the lead and everything. But other than that, there was no destroyed cars. One had a flat tire, a bunch of spins like we kind of seen that we thought of. But no major wrecks and no major catastrophes. I mean, it was surprising because anytime you think of the ARCA series, especially going to track, especially the lack of practice they're getting, I honestly thought it was going to be a lot more hectic. In fact, it was so calm that not a lot of people, like, there were people that covered it, but no one had anything bad to say. It was good, clean racing, hard racing. Michael Self out battling Ty Gibbs to get the win. In all honesty, and Kevin Reed, Michael's crew chief himself, he said that I'm glad that we got through this because we're still unsure what's happening next. And with all the rules that NASCAR keeps changing for us, we weren't sure what was going to happen next. But this just takes the weight off our shoulders for what's going to happen next.
Oh, yeah, no. And definitely the thing that you have to take away from this was just a whale of a job by all the drivers in the ARCA division. Not a lot of them with a whole lot of road course experience, a lot of young up-and-coming talent, a lot of rookies in that division. And the fact that it was as clean of a race as it was just really is a testament to just how promising this upcoming batch of newcoming NASCAR stars is. And people like Haley Deegan, who had an impressive 6.1, and then Michael Self, like you said, getting the Daytona sweep there. It's definitely a great race. And set the tone for a really exciting weekend that got kicked off with the Xfinity race on Saturday. Where we saw at times the most hectic of races, but at other times the most orderly of races. It really was a tale of two events.
It was. And one thing, too, about the ARCA race, and I'll be done talking about it, is they were on wet tires the entire race, meaning they had kind of almost street tires you can buy and put on your car. They ran that. They had grip. They had grooves. They had everything and anything. Now, that was the only time we've seen the running tires.
Zach, you're wrong, because I buy used tires. They don't use used tires, do they?
Well, actually, they do. There are teams that use used tires. And we will actually get into that, because that is a talking point for the Xfinity race for a team of cars that have a 7 and a 4 in both of them. We'll talk about that, but no.
I can't even make a joke. I can't even make a joke. This is terrible.
Well, you got to go make a joke there, John.
What? What did you say? Dude, were you a bitch to me? What did you say?
Whoa. I said you got to go make making jokes, John.
Yeah, none of us are good at that, trust me. But
I'm really good at it.
I'm
a joker.
But that's something real quick I wanted to mention. But that was something I wanted to mention, and the reason why is because when the Xfinity car started the race on Saturday afternoon, NASCAR said as they were going on the pace laps, it's a wet track. They're going to have to put on the tires for grip, which were the groove tires, wet tires. But then right as cars were going down pit lane, NASCAR made the announcement that you can put on, it's a damp racetrack, you can put on whatever tires you want, and that actually started the calamity of this beginning laps of the race, in all honesty. Anyone?
I thought you were really on the transition break there. I thought you were like mid stopping, my guy. Yeah, no, I remember catching that though when I watched the ARCA recap. It was kind of a really botched call. I mean, NASCAR is not perfect. I mean, they sometimes don't get it right, but you can definitely tell the grievances felt by Michael Smith and his team when they came down and made the botched call. But it happens like that. I think they all recovered quite nicely.
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing. So the wet tires kind of were the entire tires they used in ARCA. Xfinity, they could start off on tires that were the wet tires or the damp or the dry tires, the slicks. And that kind of put some people in a predicament, because some people got that notice very last second, or they didn't get the notice at all, and they were kind of stuck on some wet tires.
And definitely those people had a right to that. I feel like I was kind of a botched call. And it felt like they could have been handled a little bit better, but it just really showed just how much this was all new to NASCAR and these teams and drivers, because a lot of teams just really weren't on the ball there. NASCAR definitely wasn't on the ball, but I think the teams that really rose to the occasion and that were going to perform well rose to the top anyway, so it kind of evened out in the end, I feel like.
For sure, and by the way, what I mean is, you know, the racetrack was a little wet. It was damp. It had rain that night, but one thing to make clear is there were no jet dryers. There were no helicopter engines. There were no air tightens. Because this was a road course, they have wet tires that they would have to use. And the Xfinity race, the UN OH 188 kind of saw an interesting
interesting start, and the reason I say that is because of that fact that there was that botched call, which, I mean, in all honesty, NASCAR, and you even said it, Brady, NASCAR has not always made the best decisions or the right calls on stuff. This one, they made the right call. You can put on wet tires or dry tires. And to start the race off, the number 98 got wet tires, and he even said, oh, we've made a mistake right off the bat.
And it really sucks for those teams because you're just like, well, what are you to do? But, I mean, it's one of those deals. We're all humans. We make mistakes. But not what you want to see, especially at an event like this that was going to get so much press and coverage because of it being such a special one-off inaugural event. And the buzz right now in NASCAR is road courses. People like them. They're fan-friendly. And there's always talks about adding new road courses. And if this one is a hit, which we're going to get into here in a little bit, spoiler alert, it was a hit. We might be seeing more of these coming down the road. So, you know, this is definitely something NASCAR's going to have to take a look at.
Well, let's hop into that. I mean, this race was something that, in all honesty, we didn't honestly know what was going to happen right off the bat because of the fact that no driver, you know, there's a handful of drivers that have ran the road course, but not in these Xfinity trucks or cup cars. Now, one thing I want to preface is any driver that has ran in these cars, a great example is Alex Obey with the incident that he had a couple weeks ago where they were doing an SEC A test down there in a NASCAR older Xfinity car where his fine was removed, the penalty was taken away. He did get some practice in it, but most of the other cars they've ran have either had ABS, have traction control, have, you know, a bunch of assists on them. These stock cars, they have nothing. You don't have ABS. You don't have traction or stability control. You have nothing. You have to legitimately ride the wheel and figure out how well you're going to be able to manage it.
And honestly, that's why a lot of people were saying, like, it really wasn't much of an advantage for him, even if it was some sly attempt to get extra track time, because the cars he was driving – his braking points are going to be completely different because the braking package is different. Those cars can stop on a bit more on dime than the big, heavy stock cars that he's going to be driving at the Daytona Raceway anyway. So it was really kind of senseless for it to get into debate, but you never want there to be a competition advantage, so they're always going to take a look at that. But, no, it was definitely going to be a tricky run for the team either way.
But I love it because of the fact that, you know, we were I'm going to keep saying this. We weren't sure what was going to happen because we didn't. This was brand new. You know, we've gone to Watkins Glen. We've gone to Sonoma. We've gone to Infineon. We've gone to Road America. We've gone to all these other tracks. This one, to sum it up, Denny Hamlin kind of said it the best. I hope you all are praying because I'm not going to tell anyone where my breaking point was. And The Xfinity race starting off was fairly clean. It was one of those that it was like we were all waiting. We were like, okay, is it going to be something big going into turn one? Because that turn one is not like any other kind of turn one. It kind of leans into a very harsh, almost a 180-degree turn. And it was clean. I was surprised. You know, there was some bumping, some banging. Some people went wide. One person spun out. But there was no real damage. There was no real concern about anything. All it was just like, all right, we've made it through. Let's start the race.
And the Xfinity race was really kind of a bunch of that all afternoon long. The one part of the Xfinity race that really I felt like stood out amongst them all as really being the tricky part for all those drivers was the backstretch chicane. I caught about three or four incidents where drivers just simply took the corner too wide, dipped the splitter down in the grass, just grabbed a hold of that splitter and shot those cars into the air like a freaking bottle rocket. And it claimed even veteran drivers like, what was that, the Bamber guy? What was his first name? Scott?
Oh, yeah, something like that, yeah. In the Cup race or in the Xfinity race?
Yeah, Xfinity race. He drove the 21 car. I know his last name was Bamber.
Yeah, Earl.
Earl Bamber. That's right. That's more fancy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it even caught him, and he's a legendary driver at this track, so it even caught him out. So a lot of drivers are struggling. Probably even did you see the Justin Haley wreck? That one really trashed the number 11 car because it grabbed a hold of that Lee Filter car and wasn't going to let go.
I was just about to say that because that was really the first instance that caused the caution. Technically, it was his teammate, the number 10 of Ross Chastain, stopping on turn 8, that kind of brought up the caution. But, man, Justin Haley going all Dukes of Hazzards, all four wheels off the ground. I mean, you when I saw that, I was just like, how is he able? He drove it off. Like, he couldn't finish the race because of how much damage there was. But in all honesty, the fact that he was able to drive it down pit road, or at least to the entrance of pit road, I was surprised, because I did not think, with how high that thing got in the air, how hard it dug into the ground, and how hard it landed, that the thing was going to be operable to drive. It surprised the hell out of me. I can't lie, because look at it. Go to if you follow if you're on Twitter, go to College Racing's Twitter page. I actually did a giveaway where you could win the front bumper from that. And just like the photos that are posted of the bumper that they were shipping out to a prize winner, and the photos of him in the air, you just think, how is that thing still somewhat in one piece without the splitter?
Oh no, it was crazy. And I mean, aside from that, we really saw very minimal incidents, surprisingly, in the Xfinity race. So it was really the chicanes that were giving the drivers a lot of trouble, where we saw a couple drivers even miss the front stretch chicane and got on those turns a little bit and had to pay the penalty, where they had to come to a complete stop on the front stretch. Also, turn one was really tricky throughout the weekend, especially in those opening laps, where drivers just simply overshot the drive into turn one just because of lack of experience and lack of awareness on where the braking points were. And we even saw it not bite just rookies, but even more experienced drivers that have tons of road racing experience. So it was really a tricky track, but I got to say, I was hooked. I really enjoyed it. It's always great being back at Daytona, the World Center of Racing. It's a special place for me. I know it's a special place for you, Zach, so I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And just be able to experience it in a whole new light. So that was also kind of a cool way to experience the track.
Oh yeah, like you said, those chicanes, the bus stop and the front chicane, gave a lot of drivers issues. That front chicane, I think, gave all drivers issues at one point in the weekend because of the fact that it's new. That's not something that they normally run at Daytona. In fact, the turtle shells that they had there were from the Charlotte Motor Speedway. They lent them out to them because they don't need them for another few weeks. So they're like, oh, you can borrow them. But I loved it. As somebody that one of my first races I worked at with a team when I moved down here to the Carolinas was actually Road America up in Wisconsin. And road courses are always fun because they have that big diversity. You can be in fourth gear, and 30 seconds later, you could be busting down from 180 to almost 45 miles per hour. It's so cool, and it's such a unique experience to not just watch and see, but to hear and to feel, because it's like nothing else.
That's what I've always heard, and I've always wanted to check out the road courses, especially Road America. That track just looks gorgeous, and a place like Daytona where you can go see and experience such a historic track, but also take in the sights and sounds of your typical road course, that also is really appealing to me and definitely moved its way to the top of my bucket list, at least for the Clash event, because effective next year, even though we may not get it on the schedule as a points race, it is on the schedule next year as our off-road, a preseason warm-up, our scrimmage match, if you like, where we have the book class next year. They're going to run it on the infield road course. So that might be a good twofer, get to see the infield road course race on the Clash and take in the Daytona 500 all in one week.
Exactly. And this is something that I think a lot of drivers that are – because we don't know what the Clash format's going to be, how the entries are going to work, because we don't have real pole winners just yet. All the polls that have been drawn and everything, it's kind of weird, but it does show that we can have great racing on that track, and I can't wait for that, especially when it does come to more races down the road, because I do hope this opens up the door for us to have more races, not just at the road course at Daytona, but other tracks, or even do street circuits. I want to see NASCAR Cup cars on Long Beach the same weekend as the Indy cars, because who wouldn't want to see big old stock cars on the road at that street course in Long Beach, California?
I mean, maybe some racing purists, but we can broaden their horizons, you know?
What, you want to go to Europe?
I mean, down. Let's do it.
That's but going back to the Xfinity race, I felt like so there was a lot of instances on the track, but because of how big the track is and people can get themselves straightened up, it's not like some ovals where drivers will spin out and they'll throw caution here because of the track. I mean, the track itself, the normal track is 2.5 miles long. The road course is 3.610 miles long, so it adds a mile and a tenth to it. But there's also places to slow down and all of this to where any instance we saw, whether they were spinning or they overshot a chicane, we saw them, but we didn't really acknowledge them that much because of the fact that there was so many places where you could have technically what they call a local caution if needed. Basically, yellow flags are on a certain sector of the track saying it's under caution because there's either a slow car or a spin or something. So it took some major instances where whether cars were dead stopped on the track, like the 10 and the 21 at one point, but also, you know, for some major carnage, like, I don't know, the last restart almost.
Oh, I mean, a lot of the restarts were just pure chaos, but it was glorious pure chaos, you know?
I love it. I love it. Because that's the one thing about that. With this hard, because they go from I think, a low second gear right at the drop of the, at the start-finish line, all the way to almost third high gear, and they have to bump it down to first gear to get into that corner. And the heavy braking and everything, it just makes for a great race action and a great unpredictability, because you don't know how hard someone's going to break into that. And someone that's played that short track or the road course on Forza a lot, it's so hard to predict what and where is going to be the proper braking point, especially when, you know, the start of the race, it was a little damp and you couldn't really tell, are these tires warm enough? Is there standing water there? It didn't give it much, but anytime we had a restart, holy crap, I had to buckle my seatbelt in and I was on my couch.
Oh, yeah, no, it was definitely great. And, you know, we even saw some great drives. Definitely with the Xfinity race, you saw with the lack of practice, lack of qualifying, lack of on-track time, the drivers that get around road courses the best, the drivers that are really comfortable on the road courses, really experienced, those are the drivers that dominated today. We're talking Chase Briscoe, Austin Cindric, and even saw Noah Gragson on there. I saw a stat during the race that really surprised me. This was his seventh road course event ever in his career, and he has finished top 10, including this last Saturday, every road course event that he's entered in the top 10. I think that's a really impressive stat. And that puts him among some elite company there, but not as close to the elite company that Austin Cindric put himself in. He tied the legendary Sam Hart as the only driver in the Xfinity Series to win 5 out of 6 races in the last few events here. There's been no team better than that 22, and to tie the legendary Sam Hart, that was a hell of an accomplishment, right, Zach?
Oh, that's beyond an amazing accomplishment, because that puts you with history, with Providence. It's kind of like, I know it's not the same kind of stat, but it's like tying yourself with Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt winning 7 championships like Jimmy Johnson did. I mean, that's something that your name goes into the history book. And if Austin Cindric can win this Dover race or even play 2nd, his average finish for the past 7 races is going to be astronomical, because he's gotten a majority of his wins so far in the past 7 races, which is just as crazy. But you said standouts, and that's true. There's been some standouts especially with this lack of practice, but also this race itself and Road America, which was a couple weeks ago. For instance, Andy Lowey, who's making 2 starts so far this year, and he might make another one at the Roval. It's uncertain just yet. He got both top 5 in both the races he's done in that 0-2, which is normally piloted by Brett Moffitt. But because NASCAR said that no teams – or no driver can do more than one, or can only do one race of at the road course this weekend. He was not allowed to race, so Andy Lally, with a fantastic throwback scheme to Mark Martin, pulled the double at Road America and here, getting both top fives. And he had Jeremy Clements, who actually won a road course at Road America in 2017. I was at that race and finishing sixth. And A.J. Allmendinger, who's a road course ringer and has done very well at every kind of road course, you know, getting fifth for himself, or fourth, I'm sorry, and being the best colleague car to finish, which isn't saying much when the other two are wrecked out or have a broken transmission, which sucks for them. But him and Justin Allgaier had a little bit of an issue, I guess is the best way to call it.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of issues. Someone needed tissue. It was kind of a whole to do. But and I really didn't quite get that their whole to beef, unless there was something a couple weeks ago that I didn't quite gather. But yeah, I don't know. I just felt like their instance on track, at least during that race on Saturday, was mainly just, you know, good hard racing. But like I said, I don't know if there was something that happened in a prior event that got them all kerfuffled, all their tails in a feather and all that such. But I don't know. But it was definitely entertaining, I got to say. I mean, you don't normally see A.J. Allmendinger and Justin Allgaier, you know, being the ones to cause beefs and ruckuses in the garage area. So, you know, the road courses and unexpected races, they bring out different emotions in people.
So I actually looked into it because I so Saturday when this race was going on, you were actually at our very good friend Greg's his wedding, and I was posting in the group chat between you, me, Greg, and our other buddy Chris about the race, and I said, "Oh, AJ just dropped a hard bomb on live TV," and AJ said, or not AJ, I'm sorry, Justin said, "Oh, you know, it's just like Talladega all over again," and AJ gave him this look like, "What?" And I even had the same look on my face, like, what? I had to go back. So there was an issue with the 10 car and Justin Allgaier at Talladega earlier this year where Justin thought it was AJ, which it wasn't. But you're right, this was a racing incident that it was just – and AJ even admitted himself, hey, I made a mistake. He wheel hopped. AJ's a fantastic road course racer. His only cup victory comes at Watkins Glen when he was running the 47 car. And he admitted, hey, I made a mistake. I was waiting, though, for a fight to happen because I was just like, what's going to happen? You could just tell the way that Justin was walking. I was like, oh, he's going to punch him. He's going to fight. There's going to be a fight. There's going to be a fight. And when there wasn't, I was like, okay, this is kind of odd. But the real beef isn't real beef between them. I think it's just Justin doesn't like the Culti cars. I think they're better looking cars. I think that's why.
Well, that, and what a season for Justin Allgaier. He's had stout cars week in and week out. We know he's talented. We know he's a race-winning driver. We know what he's capable of. But these last few weeks, God, it's got to be hard because he's had good cars, but just strategy either go awry, getting swept up in wrecks like last weekend or even this weekend at Daytona. This incident's not of his own making. Just terrible, terrible, terrible luck for the 17. If they can ever, you know, get whatever bad juju they got on them right now kind of going away and get their mojo back, I feel like they're championship contenders, no doubt about it. But, damn, they have really, really struggled.
Well, if we look at the points, I mean, Justin is still in it. He's only seventh in points, and there's not a lot of drivers that have won that are out there. Austin Cindric, Chase Briscoe, Noah Gregson, Harrison Burton, Justin Haley, all winners this season. And other than that, it's Brandon Jones and Riley Herbst. And that's still, you know, it's saying something. Justin is the highest, right behind Ross, the second highest, I'm sorry, right behind Ross Chastain that's up there in points that hasn't won a race. But you're right, consistency, it does well for drivers, but you do, I mean, I felt bad for him, don't get me wrong, because what happened, it was a racing incident. It wasn't malicious in any way. It was, I'm going to take him out because I don't like him. But the way it was handled, not so much. But I feel like Justin, especially coming up at Dover, he's ran really well at Dover. I think he'll run really well up front and possibly even get the win because he's a really good racer there. He's real conservative because he knows of how hard that racetrack can be. And if he plays his card right with right strategy, he'll be able to win.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. And what a shot in the arm it would be for that entire team, because I know that once they can break through that ceiling that they seem to be trapped behind and really rattle off a couple good finishes, get maybe a couple wins, they'll be right back where they need to be in championship form. But they just got to shake this bad luck and really take it to them. So I hope they can put together some good solid runs and maybe find a couple wins before the chase starts.
For sure. And I mean, other notables. So, well, I guess we should talk about this. I believe it was the last restart where there was a couple cars that share numbers, the 74 and the 47. I'll let you take this one because I know you're real vocal about this, and then I will give my sixth sense.
I mean, I could tell where they were coming from in this event. There a couple. Oh, wait, are you talking about their restart, or are you talking about their stolen trailer predicament?
Well, we can go both. I was going to go with the restart first.
Okay. I wanted to make sure before I started ripping them apart, I'm like, wait a minute. I hope you didn't mean me talking about the other thing. No. I mean, the restart, it was a bum deal. There's no two cents about it. And I don't know if they were really just that confident. Like, you know, I've seen enough underdog movies and Disney flicks. This is our time, Bert. We've got it. We can win it from the start. We just got to believe. And then they sail it off into turn one and completely miss it by like three yards, man. I mean, the longest yard could have been filmed in the entirety of how much they missed turn one. So, I mean, but I get it because you don't get many shots, especially like for those back marker teams. They don't have a lot of funding, and they got to take advantage of all the chances they're given. And this track was the great equalizer, you know. No one had any leg-ups on there. Road courses, even out the playing field a lot as is. But when you go to a road course event that no one's ever been to, it really, really brings it down to just raw out driver talent. But when you don't have a lot of experience in the cars, you can't really go around throwing around the weight that you have a lot of raw driver talent. So, you know, that take that with a grain of salt. But it was kind of funny, though. I was amused.
Well, so the reason I say this is I know the exact reason on why, and I kind of said it in our group chat. So they didn't have any tires left. There was no need for them to come down pit road to get tires. And I actually gave a great example when Eric Jones was about to win the championship at Homestead in the Xfinity Series about 3-4 years ago. Cole Witt, who doesn't race anymore, he stayed out because he didn't have any tires left, and he kind of cost Eric his championship. Now, obviously, there are championship implications on this. You win, you're in type situation. No cars were destroyed. A lot of, you know, spins and uncertainties of where the corner starts in some cases. But that's the big reason what actually happened was they ran out of tires. They didn't, you know, and I was going to say this earlier, a lot of teams do get secondhand tires, but right now with no practice or anything, no teams are getting secondhand tires from teams. So they were just out of tires, and they're like, yeah, well, just hope for the best. You know, just if I was them, I would have just sailed it off. I would have gone high, let the real competitors go. But, you know, that's not – I doubt they didn't listen to me. They didn't look at the Zach Beach or Payne book and – you know, no one got destroyed. That's the good thing. But yeah, as someone that has seen field fillers, they were field fillers ish until, well, about 2 a.m. on Sunday morning.
I mean, was it really 2 a.m. when that happened?
They're speculating they were at a hotel, and that was stolen between 2 a.m. and like 6 a.m. or something like that. So what I'm saying is, Mike Harmon, who, even though the fat man still owes me some money, I don't wish this upon anyone. One of his trailers was stolen with the, I believe it was the 47 car that, actually finished 17th with Kyle Weatherman. The trailer and the truck was stolen from a hotel parking lot in Georgia, and they have tracking on it, but they're having a tough time trying to find it. It's in Florida now, and just to tell you this, it was like, it's nuts to see what's going on. And there's a reward out there for $5,000 if anyone has information. Just go to the Mike Harmon Racing on Facebook, Twitter, and there might be a website out there. I don't know if he can afford one. Well, he's got $5,000 to shell out for a reward, so maybe there is. But yeah, it's an odd one because of that. But I just was like, I saw the news. I was like, oh boy, that's kind of crazy.
Oh no, it's definitely crazy, and you need to see that. And I hope they find it. I really feel like it'd be hard to completely hide an entire trailer, but then again, what do I know? I don't know much about the petty thievery ringing around the greater, or where were we at, Daytona region. Florida Man exists for a reason. I don't know much about Elizabeth and Dr. John, but I know about a Florida Man, and I feel like that's what we got a fourth Maya Carmen is a victim of.
Well,
now
especially
what?
This that
what was that lizard man comment now? Let's hear this again.
I said I don't know much about a lizard man, but I know about a Florida man.
Okay. Lizard man's about 7.5 feet tall and will tear you apart limb from limb.
Well, I don't think he can fit in a race. I don't think he can fit in a race car, so that's probably a good chance of a lizard man
not.
In the car. but yeah,
know.
So
I don't know much about this lizard man, so maybe he can.
That's true. But so that's a situation with them right now. So if anyone is in the Florida area, go to the Mike Harmon race, and they have posted up photos of the truck, the trailer, and some of the content. They're listed to go to Dover, whether they have a backup trailer or hauler or something, but they don't have the other pit box. One more time?
JD Motorsports, I heard, is going to give him a hand to try and get into the next rig.
JD does have some spare trailers and trucks, so we could see that. But the biggest thing is going to be able to have it's the equipment that's in there. It's not just the car. It's pit box, guns, tires, rims, the mechanics box to get this thing through tech, springs, parts, and motors. I mean, there's so much more in it than just a car. And, you know, as long as no one got hurt, that's a big thing for me, but hate it for them. And hopefully we'll see them at the track. I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see what their plan is if they can't find it.
That will be the interesting thing, especially for a team like that and, you know, kind of just does what it can to get to a track week to week. So hopefully they can find it, you know, and get everything returned safe and sound and get back to racing. It's not too much longer left in the season. So, and 2020 is just the gift that keeps on giving. So I hope for their sake that they can find it soon and without much further incident.
It's the year that doesn't end. It just goes on and on, my friend. Well, the Xfinity race. Overall, I really enjoyed it. I've rewatched it, and in all honesty, great race, good racing action. Hopefully, we get to see this track again, the road course at Daytona. Whether they add it to the schedule, which would be fun, or whether they just use it as an exhibition event for the Cup Series for the Clash, be just as good. I can't wait though.
I mean, it was definitely a 10 for 10, but, you know, I think we've exhausted everything we need to exhaust on the Xfinity Series, unless you got a full field rundown, my guy.
I'll give it to you, because I want to go through the truck one really bad.
Well, I don't have the full field rundown, so I guess let's go on to the trucks.
My bad. I got you. Well, I got the rundown. I'm in the apartment, so Austin Cindric, like we said, getting the win overall. With leading 21 laps. He had Brandon Jones, which that was a surprise to me. Noah Gregson, AJ Allmendinger, and Andy Lally are your top five. Jeremy Clemens, Riley Herbst, Harrison Burton, Justin Allgaier, Matt Schneider, impressive run for him in the 93, finishing 10th. Ryan Sieg, Josh Blicky, Tommy Joe Martin, Bailey Curry, and Michael Annett is your top 15. Jade Burv, who's actually making his first Xfinity start, he was up there and was about to take the lead at one point in the double or the 07 for Bobby Dodder. Kyle Weatherman in the 47, Jesse Little in the 4, Scott Hecker in the 78, and BJ McLeod in the 6 is your top 20. Stephen Lynch in the 61, Matt Mills in the 5 in 22nd, Cody VanDerWaal in the 52, finishing 23rd. Josh Williams, 92, 24th. Mike Wallace making another comeback for the road courses in the zero for Johnny Davis Motorsports, finishing 25th. Joe Graff Jr., Alex LeVay, Brandon Godoff, who actually had a pretty good run for himself until a late race incident. Chase Briscoe and Bobby Reese finishing the top 30. Preston Bardis in the 36. Jeffrey Earnhardt, Earl Bobber from the UK, who he had a great run for himself until a late race incident, finishing 33rd. Brandon Brown, 34th. Holden Crones in the 66, finishing 35th. Ross Chastain, 36th. Daniel Hemric, which I hate to see, he just got dumped, finishing 37th. And Justin Haley in last place, the 38th.
Really has a time of time.
Wow.
Pinch, buddy.
Yeah. You know, got to pinch it when I can.
You know, it'd be like that. But, no, now on to truck race. What an event. What a good precursor to what was a very fantastic day of racing in Daytona. Zach, take it away, buddy.
Well, overall, the truck race, to me, it was really good. And the reason I say that is sometimes we have these truck races where they're bland and boring. They don't happen that much often. But they happen when we have a lot of rookies at a track they've never been to. And technically, everyone on this list are brand-new rookies because they've never been to the Daytona road courses besides, again, like Trans Am, SSCA, or the 24 Hours of Daytona, but, again, completely different cars. So I was expecting a lot of chaos right at the beginning and it really to calm down. We kind of had that. The opening laps, a little hectic, a little wide, a little uncertainty, and they kind of calmed down. Then you had the first incident at lap 12, so only 12 laps in an incident, and it wasn't a wreck or anything by any means. It was just the 42 truck stopped, was having, I believe it was electrical issues or running issues. The 42 of Mark Smith actually had brake issues. But again, I was just so surprised on how calm this one was, in the sense of no real accidents, no trucks were really torn up. We had a few blown tires. Other than that, we didn't have anything crazy or hectic or a car flipping and getting airtime like Travis Pastrana. And I checked to make sure he wasn't in this race because I would be disappointed if he didn't get some hang time on the Turtles on the last chicane coming to start finish line. But overall, not a lot of hecticity with lap cars, but those restarts, again, just crazy going into the first turn.
You know, I agree with most of that, but there were some things I feel like you're not quite remembering. I mean, there were a couple of drivers that went for a hell of a loop in that backstretch chicane. Ben Rhodes comes to mind. He really plowed up some grass back there. On the very first lap, I'm really shocked we didn't have more incidents than what we ended up having, because in the very first corner, Zane Smith, our pole sitter, misses it by a quarter mile, just almost drives straight off into the grass. Definitely did not have his braking points down to where he needed to have them at. So I was like, man, if this is where we're going to start off, we are going to be in for a fun day. But it eventually calmed down, like you said. It wasn't overly hectic, but there were some dodgy incidents, I got to say. And
there were.
And wasn't there a couple spins there in turn one there late in the going that kind of forced a couple overtimes?
Spins, not well, there was no spins that caused overtime. What it was a truck stopped, the 19th truck of Derek Cross stopped on turn three, and then the 40 truck, which I believe was Carson Hovick, yeah, that's the guy. He technically crashed, but he just couldn't get the truck refired again. And I feel bad because I listened to Door Bumper Clear earlier, and I found out that they were having electrical issues. And instead of pushing them, NASCAR said, because the 19 brought out the car, was almost brought out the caution twice, but in fact, he brought out only once. And that one time, NASCAR said, oh, you're going to the garage, you're done, because he was having electrical issues. And that caused him to lose two spots, which is enough points to actually knock him into the playoff contentions. But the restarts, and again, like you said, no matter what, they were hectic everywhere. I did love it. But the fact that we only had five cautions, 15.2% of them on of the race ran with it, and only 7 laps of caution. Then again, when you're running almost a 3 1/4 or 3 3/4 road course, you got plenty of time to clean up or go into the pits for one time.
Oh yeah, definitely. No, it was interesting, but what can you do? Oh, I didn't realize that happened.
But I was surprised. Sheldon Creed comes out and wins the road course. I didn't see this. I saw people more or less like Park Kligerman, because he runs a lot of road course stuff in his spare time for fun. I was thinking more, him or Stuart Friesen. Alex Tagliani, who was up there at one point, was going for the lead and then got spun out. And I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. Tagliani, who's an amazing – he was an IndyCar driver. He ran in the truck series whenever they went to Canada in some big, big truck – I think it was always for Kyle Busch Racing. I was surprised that he was running up there, but he got spun. That's the thing that surprised me. But I was just like, really? Sheldon Creed? Then I did a little research. I'm like, okay, yeah, he's done quite a bit of off-road road course racing, which I guess translates somehow.
Well, I really took an interest in Sheldon Creed after I listened to the Dale Jr. Download when they had Robbie Gordon on. And for those of you who don't know what the connection is there, Robbie Gordon has that Stadium Super Truck series, and I didn't know a whole lot about the series. I'm going to be completely honest before that interview. And then I listened to Dale's podcast where he had Robbie on, and Robbie really kind of explained, kind of the thought process behind why he started the series in the first place, the whole goal of the series, everything kind of connected with that. And I really learned just how much that series promotes driver control and really promotes a driver that can drive a car to the absolute ragged edge and still, get it pointed in the right direction and get the results that you want, get the wins, get the checkered flags. And Sheldon Creed was kind of Robbie's protege. And, if Robbie had reined in his temper, a lot of experts say that he would have been a lot more successful and probably a lot more world-renowned and gotten the credit that his talents truly deserve for how super unbelievably gifted he was behind the wheel. Unfortunately, in Robbie's case, though, his mouth usually did more of the talking than his right foot did, which was sad because it definitely, I think, shortened what could have been a really prolific NASCAR career. But in the rare glimpses where he was completely on in a given day and he showed us the well and the depth of his talent, it really showed what the potential there could be. And if he's really guiding and nurturing Sheldon Creed's career like it sounded like he was, it didn't shock me at all to see Creed come out of nowhere, shock all the onlookers, and take a very surprising and well-deserved upset win.
Yeah, I hadn't listened to that latest Junior Download yet. I've been catching up on something else real quick, but that's a good point. Sheldon.
Unacceptable.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to do something.
It's unacceptable. Gosh.
But that's true. You said that it makes a lot of sense. Robbie is an established racer across the board. NASCAR, he has wins. The Baja Series, he has wins. IndyCar, he has wins. And to take a guy like Sheldon Creed, who at one point he ran Johnny Davis Motor stuff for a few races and then went into a full-fledged truck career for GMS Racing and got his first win this year, now his second win. It's great to see that he's able to focus his talent into kind of a couple series, because he does run that trucks that off-road truck series. They did a race up in at the Road America. I don't think he was there he might have been there actually, but it's great to hear that because of the fact of how much Sheldon actually does work. Because I found out he does a lot of work at the race shop when he can. Obviously, right now it's a little different, but before COVID hit and everything, he was at the shop just about every day. He doesn't live too far. Checking on how work is coming along, checking on the trucks, doing what he needs to. And it's good to see a young man, still doing stuff like that, still working hard and working with teams. You don't see that much often where a driver's in there, not even just to check on his cars, but sometimes turn wrenches. There's one photo I can always think of, and it's Jody Sauter up at Thor Motorsports. He has a couple wrenches in his hand, and he's in the Thor Sport lobby because there's a young fan that wanted to meet him. And I had to point that out. I was like, I don't think we've seen any drivers with wrenches in their hands in the shop lately, and Johnny's one of the few. And to hear not just that he that's just that Sheldon's doing a lot with Robbie and that kind of stuff, but to see that he's at the shop a lot doing work is great to see and to hear.
Well, it sounds like he's going about it the right way to really get into the sport, really know what it's about and what you need to do to be successful. And he's learning from the greats. You know, a lot of the drivers that were well-established in the series, you know, like the Dale Earnhardts, the Richard Petties, the reason why they always had a lot of success and really were resonating a lot with their fans was their ability to work on their own cars and really understand the equipment that they were driving. And that kind of, you know, mentality is still very well sought out, you know, amongst the modern day fans. Even though it's kind of a bygone thing, when you can find it, it's rare. And I really like that we found that here in Sheldon Creed. And I really like seeing that he's got potential to, you know, not be just a one-trick pony, and that he can be versatile and win on road courses and the big 2 mile tracks.
That's for sure. And one thing we do want to mention too was the heat down there in Daytona. I mean, it was super hot down there. Crew guys are taking extra precautions, but there were some drivers themselves who there was quite a few drivers that as soon as they got out of the truck, they had to get they had to lay down, get ice and water on them. So there's one driver, Ty Majeski, who is an established late model racer, won tons of major races in the Midwest, has won ARCA races. He actually pulled off early. He was overheating, not just the truck, but himself. And he went to the in-care fuel center, but then he was taken to the nearby hospital and was released later that night. But he had to get a lot of liquid because he was just so dehydrated.
And you'll have that. I even saw on Nice Motorsports Instagram after the race, Natalie Decker was talking about just the toll it took on her body. She got caught up in a couple of those kerfuffles, but managed to get there towards the end. But definitely the heat was a factor. And we're going to have that, you know, here in a couple of weeks because it won't be long before these drivers and teams for all three divisions are back right there in Florida and Daytona for the regular scheduled oval event.
Oh, God, I cannot wait for that. But yeah, I mean, the heat and there's actually a lot of not just teams but spotters saying, man, this is just unsafe for them as well. Because some of them were pulling double duty. Some of them were going from the trucks to the to the cup race, I'm sorry, and being up there in the heat, even with the minimal shade they had and the lightning that struck during the cup race, and we'll talk about that, even then it was still, you know, I believe it was Brett Griffin from Door Bumper Clear who spots for Clint Bowyer said, man, I am pinker than pink, and I looked on his Twitter. I was like, oh, man. Freddie Kraft and Joey Logano's spotter all said, yeah, we got burnt pretty good, and we kept applying sunscreen. I was just like, oof, I am glad I was not spotting that day.
That would have been a rough one. And what a tricky track to try and spot, because Daytona itself is already a feat just because of how massive the property is. But when you got them snaking, you know, through the infield road course, it adds a whole nother layer to the event.
Well, so a lot of there were some spotters, I'm sorry, who've actually spotted the road course for the 24 hours of Daytona race and even some SCCA events. So a lot of them have been used to it, and a lot of them actually give information out to other spotters because of that, which is great to hear that there's people still working together, even though they are not working for the same team. They're still working with each other. Then again, you don't want one of your drivers to come plowing through and be like, hello, and destroy six cars, which we didn't get to see, but we saw some interesting stuff, to say the least. But yeah, spotting there, a lot of spotters who've never spotted that before said themselves, it was difficult at first, but once you got 5, 6, 7, 8 laps in, you can kind of feel the rhythm and you can kind of tell, hey, I got nothing for you on here. I got nothing for you here. And you just had to tell the driver, hey, it's in your hands for the next 15, 20, 30 seconds, which isn't uncommon. We do see that for a bunch of other tracks. Pocono is one. Talladega is 1-2 coming off turn 4. And even now at Phoenix with the new start-finish line orientation where the spotter stand is. So them having to give blind luck was not a first, and it will not be a last, I will say.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. But no, I think that pretty much wraps up really the main highlights. You want to give us the full field rundown on that one, Zach?
Yay. So, like I said, the winner, Sheldon Creed, who had one hell of a run for himself in those last laps. And then our homeboy, Brett Moffitt. I got to say this. When Brett was closing in on him on those last two laps, I was like, come on, Brett, just bump him. I was glad he didn't race him dirty, but I was like, oh, come on. But Brett Moffitt coming home second. Rafael Izard coming in third. His best run ever in a KBM truck. Matt Crafton coming in fourth, which was a surprise. And Austin Hill coming home fifth. Tyler Ankrum, Grant Infinger, Parker Kligerman, Scott Lagacy Jr., who we've not heard his name in a long time, finishing ninth. And Stuart Friesen finishing 10th. Austin Wayne Self, Kristen Eckes, Zane Smith, who was up there for a little while. Ben Rhodes, Tanner Gray, who his younger brother Tyler Gray was running the ARCA race. He finished in the top 15. Tyler Hill, Spencer Boyd, Brian Coller, Tate Fogelman, Natalie Decker, your top 20. Johnny Sauter, Alex Tagliani, Mike Skeet, Tim Views, and Chris Wright is your top 25. Corey Roper, Norm Benning, Carson Hoover, Cody Robfrard, and Derek Ross, your top 30. Rohoff, that's right. It looks so weird to me. Jennifer Jo Cobb, who made her 100th start in NASCAR. Or is it 100th or 200th start?
I'd say 200. It's definitely going to be more than 100, I feel like.
Yeah, it was 200th. You're right, it was 200th. Our brain skipped there for a second. Finishing 31st with a running vehicle, I will add. So she didn't destroy it or do anything dumb. Ty Majewski, Todd Gillern, Spencer Davis, and Jordan Anderson, your top 35. Mark Smith, Bobby Kennedy, and Roger Rouse finishing in the 38th. By the way, Spencer Davis back after testing positive for COVID. Great to see him back and doing, I'd say, well, having brake or a drivetrain issue, but at least he is back in the racetrack.
And, you know, that's a perfect segue to wrap up our truck series and move on to the Cup Series, because it was Spencer Davis last week, but the COVID bug bit Austin Dillon this week, and Austin Dillon was not able to make, you know, the inaugural run on the Daytona Infield Road Course and had to watch Kaz Grala wheel the number 3 car in this historic event while he sat at home. Still unsure if he's been cleared to return to racing this weekend, but what a debut race from Kaz Grala. Why don't we start there, Zach? Kind of comes from out of nowhere, made a few off starts in the Xfinity Series for Rich Childress Racing, kind of coming into his own, really just trying, you know, build a career in the sport, you know, do things the right way. He gets this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Many people were kind of questioning the call. You and Greg were discussing it before the race by Rich Childress and offered someone with more experience, but I got to say, he kind of made everyone eat their words. He had a hell of a debut, finishing 7th in his inaugural race at a track that no one's ever been to before. So, you know, you got to say, the kid's got talent.
Oh, he has a ton of talent. One thing I want to say about Kaz is he's had an interesting career path. He was running for GMS Racing in the 33 truck. Won the opening at Daytona. This is the year Matt Crafton flipped. The next year he moves into JRG Racing, which was an Xfinity team that ran the 24 and the 26. Well, midway through the season, they shut down. And the folks at a modified chassis builder said, screw it, we'll build you a team. And they took older chassis. In fact, they took a 10-year-old show chassis, took it to Talladega, and finished, I think, in the top 10. If not the top 5 with him as a rookie, technically, and then signs of RCR as a development kid. And it was interesting to see Kaz get this, because Kaz has run the 24 hours of Daytona in a Lamborghini that I believe Freddie Meyer, who spots for Bubba Wallace, he spotted for him. I believe it was him. But it was interesting that they went with him, because I said, well, one driver I would have picked myself is Anthony Alfredo, because Anthony is he's shown a great potential of what he's been running so far, especially in RCR and at tracks he's never ran at, because he's never ran at 90% of these tracks except for an iRacing. But I will give Kaz this. He did fantastic. Made smart pit decisions, kept the car in one piece, and just kept going for it. All right, then. But I will say, Kaz did a fantastic job. He kept the car clean. He kept it in one piece. And he didn't make dumb mistakes. In fact, I was expecting him to make a lot of mistakes of missing a short chute or missing a chicane or missing a braking point. And in all honesty, I think he went off track a little bit during one of the one thing, but that was it. It's not like he was constant. And everyone had probably one or two little instances like that. But the fact that a rookie making his debut starts and finishing seventh in a car that I can't say hasn't been performing well because he does have a win, but in a car that at road courses hasn't performed well.
Nice say there, honestly. I agree with you there. The number three car is definitely not a threat when it comes to the left and the right, and honestly never was even with Dale Earnhardt behind the wheel, so that's not really a knock on Austin Dillon, but you know, you can't really understate it because it was definitely a lot of unknowns, a lot of pressure, and he rose to the occasion. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets, you know, another shot at this, and who knows what kind of doors this will open up for him, especially as he's not full-time in the Xfinity Series, only got a couple starts to his credit there and only a couple scheduled starts to finish out the year behind the wheel of the 21. And all this is doing is just, you know, making him more appealing as a potential candidate for more potential races.
That's for sure. And Kaz is a great guy. I've met him several times, talked to him. He's I don't want to say he's quiet, but he's kind of chilled. He's mellowed out. He's just like, yeah. He's kind of the guy you get a beer with, and I honestly want him to succeed because he took equipment. It was a 61. Do you remember that? The 61 Ford Mustang about a year or two back that he was running, and he ran in very few races because he didn't have much sponsorship, and somehow he took equipment that no one had any idea what it was capable of because it was never a team and did fairly well, top 15, top 20s, and I think even a top 10 or two, and led laps. He has a lot of potential. I really want him to get in better equipment. I want to compare him kind of like to Matt Benedetto, where he has a lot of potential and a lot of great talent. He just needs to get into the right full-time ride. He didn't get that when he jumped up into the Xfinity Series, obviously, because the team shut down midway through, because I believe the owner of the team had health issues. So it sucks for him, but I think this is an eye-opener for potential sponsors to step up, be like, hey, we'll put you in a car full-time next year. So I hope he does, in all honesty.
And you never know, especially with the uncertainty of COVID and everything going on with that right now. You never know if someone might need him to fill it in again. So this just shows that he can perform under pressure, perform when it really matters. And if it opens up a couple more doors and he gets a couple more opportunities, this could be the break that really is the defining point of his career.
That's for sure. But if you look over this race itself, it was fair. I want to say it's fairly tame because there were no real there were no cautions. There was four of them, including the lightning strike. But there was the accident with the 18, and then that was it besides the stage breaks. Now, there were instances, and I keep saying that because, again, they didn't throw the caution flag, but there were spins, there were overshoots, there were people that missed the brakes and that had to stop because NASCAR rules, if you miss a turn or a braking zone or whatever, basically if you cut the track short, you have to rolled to a complete stop at a designated location, and you may kick off again. And Ryan Blaney had a very interesting – it was either Blaney or Harvick had a very interesting takeoff where essentially he just spun the tires the entire way down the front stretch, which, you know, that's one way to get heat in the tires after you do that. But overall, this race had a lot of interesting effects to it, including the 77 car, which – kept cutting through some grass. I think the guy's like a landscaper or something. I take that back. He's actually a stuntman. If you listen to the broadcast, I think it was Dale Jr. Steve Letarte said that the 77 of Stanford Barrett is a stuntman.
Oh, Stan Barrett.
He's a full-blown stuntman for Hollywood and for TV shows. And I was just like, and he's racing this, and turns out he's actually a full-fledged race car driver on the side and does that for fun. So I was like, all right, well, that's interesting.
Oh, you haven't heard of Stan Barrett?
I don't think so.
Dude, he's been around the sport for years, and his father actually did a couple NASCAR starts in the 80s too, because he was one of the the go-to stuntman for Hal Needham during the Smokey and the Bandit days, and so that's kind of where he got his inside ride for NASCAR, is he did a bunch of starts through Hal Needham in that friendship when Hal Needham owned the Bandit car, the Skull Bandit.
Interesting. Well, I did just look on his profile. He actually does have quite a few starts, including, a truck start, but a lot of starts in the Xfinity Series 204 and 25 Cup starts, including the latest one here. So, very interesting. What is that?
Well, drink.
The alien.
What's
coming.
What?
Nothing. Never mind.
Aliens.
It's Lizard Man.
One thing I... There it is again. One thing I do want to mention. So, J.J. Yaley was actually... his cooler box. So they have these little air conditioning units almost in the cars to cool him down. His actually malfunction broke, pushing hot air into his helmet. He actually passed out and fainted. He got out of the car. Bailey Curry took over for him. NASCAR allowed it because of a medical issue. But it was a scary situation. He passed out right on pit road, was taken into the in-care field center, was released. He was fine after getting a bunch of IV fluid into him. So wanted to put that out there real quick so I remember it. But going back to the race, there's just a lot of regular carnage for road racing, people missing breaking points, people cutting corners, and people cutting the grass because they want to be they want to try their hand at being a lawnmower. And also, I think Harvick had probably the most interesting run from turn one to turn five at one point.
Oh, goodness. So coming into that first horseshoe bend there in the infield portion of the track where they kind of have it literally looks almost like a wishbone kind of shape in the infield there, how they've got the corners there. And he got punted by Christopher Bell going into the entrance of one of the horseshoes and just slid backwards right in front of oncoming traffic. And it was like the one guy, Moses, parting the Red Sea. Harvick split up in the middle of the groove, and the cars just scattered, went left and right, and surprisingly no one hit him because he was running, fifth at the time, and so he was literally right in front of oncoming traffic when he eventually slid his ass back up onto the surface.
Oh, it scared me. When I saw that happen, I saw him sliding across the grass. I was just like, this can't end well, because I've seen in the 24 Hours of Daytona and even just race wrecks where people slide all the way through there into that and just clobber cars. And the fact that he just slid to a stop right on the pavement, everyone's like, oh, excuse me, pardon me, coming through. If you go to NASCAR's Instagram and Facebook, they have a funny video where it's just like, oh, pardon me, excuse me, sorry, excuse me, come through, sorry. That little dumb humor makes me laugh, but I was just like, I had to clinch hard because I was just like, oh, this ain't going to end well. I was thinking, six, seven cars are just going to be demolished, and he just comes to a stop, and people pass him back. And he had, a little bit of a rebound because I put him way back in the field, but coming home 17th for himself, not bad after that. But Chase Elliott getting the win, leading 34 laps, the most of anyone, and winning, being one of only a handful of drivers, the last one to do it, Tony Stewart, to win three road courses in a row.
Yeah, that goes back all the way to 04 through 05 when Stewart went on his hot streak and was the unbeatable driver of the left and the right corners. And honestly, not many people are shocked. His dad got his first win on a road course and was always super prolific on any of the times when NASCAR went left and right back in the 80s and 90s, and that was kind of his staple, his bread and butter. And so it makes sense that the son would kind of follow in his driving style, but he just has such a knack for it. We saw it when he got his first win a couple years ago in 2018 at Watkins Glen. We saw it last year when he pulled off the improbable, when he completely overshot turn one at the Charlotte Roval about halfway through the first stage. Many people thought that was done. He goofed and was not going to be able to recover, and then he just went on a tear in that final stage to work his way back up, recover from the mistake, and take that win last year. So it's just really going to show that right now between himself, Martin Truex Jr., and maybe even Kyle Busch, that there are a few drivers right now that have really got a handle on the road course event.
That's for sure. In all honesty, I see Chase, and Chase has kind of gotten a lot better. He's been racing for – quite a few seasons. And I have to say, like, that before he got his first win, he started full-time in 2016, did not get his first win until 2018, his junior year of racing, we'll say, where he won three races that year. He's won three races in 2019, and he's at two right now with still quite a few races to go left in the season. Now, he had not won a playoff race, so for him to win in a playoff will help. What?
He's won two playoff races. Actually, no, three.
He did? Three?
What? Yeah, he won Dover and Kansas in 2018, and he won the Roval last year.
You're right. How could I forget the Roval? Holy crap. Him plowing it into their
entire
barrier.
You never listen to me. You just want me on here because I'm pretty.
I thought I was the pretty one. Dang it. But, man, just the fact that the kid who – because he wasn't that – I don't want to say he wasn't that successful in road courses before, but in his Xfinity and even his first truck win, I take that back, did come from Canada. He might have wrecked someone, but it still counts. Xfinity – he wasn't that good in K&N. You know, he kind of did dominate because he would go do Sonoma and win there. So, but I mean, overall, it's just surprising for him to win. That's four road courses he's won so far?
Yep, two at Watkins Glen, one at the Roval in Charlotte, one at the Roval in Daytona now.
It's just crazy to see. And then you have the pole sitter, Denny Hamlin, who sent out a tweet. Which I thought, did you see the tweet that they said on the broadcast? I think it was during the truck race, or no, during the Xfinity race.
Oh, yeah, no, basically, Dan Hamlin was like, buckle up, buckaroos, because I have no idea what the hell I'm doing in this first corner.
That, and you got to give him credit. At least he was honest. He was just like, hey, I have no clue what the hell is going to happen. And again, I'll say it again, because it has to be said. Nobody had an idea of what the hell was going to happen because this was brand new to them. Brand new. No one had no clue what these things were going to do. But overall, you had people like Clint Bowyer, who has won at a road course, finishing sixth. You had Jimmy Johnson having one of his best finishes in a long time, finishing fourth. You actually had all four not all four. I'm sorry. I take it back. Only three of the four HMS cars finishing in the top 10. The other one being William Byron, who had a great run for himself, finishing eighth. And then Alex Bowman finishing 12th. I mean, HMS, that's a really good run for them, having all four cars in the top 15 and having three of them in the top 10 and two of them in the top 5 and a win.
And, you know, they definitely need that right about now, because right now you got Jimmy Johnson and William Byron right there on the cut line. They're battling it out amongst themselves to see if they can make it into the playoffs. Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, they've got the wins. They're safe. But right now all eyes are on that bubble and whether or not seven-time champion Jimmy Johnson can get one more playoff run in him before retiring, or if it's going to come down to his young teammate William Byron staking him right at the last minute to pull the wool over the champion's eyes and get the final cutoff spot.
That will be interesting to see, especially with Jimmy being his last season. I would hope he could get some sort of either win or get some sort of hard charge into it. It will be interesting to see. I mean, overall, you look at the points real quick before we get there. He's not in there. He's not in the points. He's just behind William Byron, just by a handful of points, only 25 points. But he needs to really hit hard to get those 25 points in order to just make the playoff.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sorry, I got caught up there. I just had a flash on my phone about Jimmy Johnson's hint of that Darlington throwback being unveiled tomorrow. Now it's got my intrigue, but yeah, what were we even talking about?
HMS having a strong run in Jimmy Johnson, 25 outside the bubble right now with I think three races to go in all three tracks, or I should say the next two tracks are tracks that he excels at, which are Daytona, where he's won many races, and Dover, where he's won many races.
I mean, definitely you can't take your eye off him at Dover. I feel like that's going to be a track where we really might see Jimmy Johnson finally break that long winless drought. It's been a long time coming, and I'm glad to see that they're putting up some different things to maybe try and get him there.
The Chevrolets look fast out of HMS. This is probably the most speed I've seen out of the HMS stable in probably 4 or 5 seasons. It's been a rough sled, especially since the advent of the Camaro by Chevrolet. It's not been the speed champion they hoped it was going to be. So hopefully they've gotten it kind of worked out from here, and they've got some different bullets they're going to be bringing to the fight because they're going to need it. And if you're going to one of Jimmy's best tracks, you want to go with momentum. And this was definitely the kind of race that he needed. Same with William Byron. That team is still struggling. Chad Knaus over there doing all he can to help rebuild. What's been the weakest link in the Hendrick Motorsports stable. And it's not a knock on William Byron. The team that they're running for goes back, if you remember, back in the early 2000s when they first expanded to the four-team operation we know and love today. The team that William Byron is driving for is the old 25 team that had Brian Vickers, Joe Nemechek, Jerry Nadeau, and was always this kind of the weak link, you know, all the way through the mid-2000s when it was eventually turned over to Casey Mears, and even the first couple of years when Dale Jr. joined the team, because that was the team that he inherited 08, 09, and 10 before they had the massive shakeup in 2011 when it became Mark Martin's team, right after Mark Martin had a couple of great seasons that kind of plummeted his stock right there. And then it became Chase Elliott's team. No, not Chase Elliott's team. It was Casey Kane's team towards the end of Kane's career when Casey Kane kind of burnt out. And now it's William Byron's problem after Casey Kane retired. So that program itself has definitely, for 2 decades now, been the lowest and weakest point in the Hendrick Motorsports stable. And it's taken Tad Knaus and William Byron to even get it this competitive. And they still got a long way to go if they ever hope to rebuild that program up to be near the level of the other three teams.
Yeah, it is interesting because it's had great drivers with it. I mean, Brian Vickers, who's won quite a few races, Joe Nemechek, who's won quite a few races, Jerry Nadeau, Casey Mears, who won the Coke 600s, that team. It is interesting to see it struggle. And if it was me, I would just start from scratch, rebuild it, because at that point, you're just at an uphill battle. Because even, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Kyle Busch even ran the 25 car for a handful of races, or if not a season. And
no.
No? No. Oh, that's right. No. He went from the 87 and then straight to 84. The 5. 81?
Yeah, he was the 84 car. That was the briefly run 15 for Hendrick Motorsports. That was a disaster.
That's right. Oh, yeah, 84. I didn't want to even remember the number. Oh, God. Yeah, have you seen that video that I believe Slap Shoes or Danny B Talks had made about the 84 team?
Yeah, I did see that. That's where I learned a lot about it, because that's it was a goof.
It was a goof. It was a ease. It was a I bet you that's the team Mike Harmon was running with. All right, well, one other thing, too, is Bubba Wallace is actually having a fantastic run for this. Going into last lap, he was actually between 8th and 7th, or 8th and 10th, I mean, going for 7th, and he kind of got punted and spun around. Had you seen that?
Yeah, I saw that. Alex Bowman kind of gave him a punt going off into the first corner to begin the final lap, and it dropped him from a potential top 10, maybe even a top 12 run that he was able to hold off a couple challenges there, all the way back to a dismal 25th. It was just absolutely heartbreaking because that team, every week they're just getting more momentum. They're signing more sponsors. They're getting more funding. They're putting together better cars. Bubba's getting more talented, more confident behind the wheel. And just little things just keep putting them a couple steps back. So they just, you know, got to find some luck to go their way. But I was definitely bummed out for that team there.
Well, it wasn't so much the 88. It was, have you listened to Door Bumper Clear yet?
No.
No? Let's just say the 43 and the 22 spotter might have had a little bit of an argument about it, because some of the footage that I've seen, the 22 actually punted punted the 43 out of the way.
Oof, duh.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I didn't see it quite well then.
Yeah, there's no TV quality. It's all camera phones and photographers. But I mean, from everything I've seen and heard them kind of argue, no, I did not hit you. Yes, you did. It was like, not yet. Joey kind of hit him. But I feel bad because Bubba's best finish at a road course is 24th. He was on track to demolish that by a long shot. And unfortunately, if they had got a green, white checkered, another one, I guarantee he would have been right back up there in the top five, if not the top 10 for sure.
And he had a good car all afternoon long. And it's just so refreshing to see that, you know, it wasn't just idle talk, that it really was just a lack of funding. Because these last few weeks, Richard Petty Motorsports has made some pretty significant sponsorship announcements. The cars are showing a lot of much better improvement. The combination of Jerry Baxter as a crew chief, him and Wallace have great chemistry, and that's showing because he's able to give Wallace cars that are comfortable to him and, you know, allow him to feel like he's got a better handle behind the wheel. And it's just really showing a lot of strength at a very, very pivotal time for Richard Petty Motorsports. This could be the make-or-break deal for them, whether or not they get to keep up Wallace and keep growing on the program they've been building, or if they have to sign someone new and completely start over again back at the bottom. And that's really been the crux of the Richard Petty organization for the better part of the last decade and a half. If you go back to the days of Bobby Labonte in the mid-2000s, you know, through A.J. Allmendinger, Eric Almirola, it seems like every time they get a good talent behind the wheel of the 43 car and a good crew chief driver combination that really starting to, you know, show some results, really starting to pay off and really help to point the direction point the program in the direction they're wanting to go, someone ends up leaving that kind of takes the whole operation completely off the rails and it makes them start back at ground zero. And I really, really hope that's not going to be another one of those scenarios. But good runs like this definitely help.
One thing I want to point out, because it kind of had been said on a couple different podcasts, was when Bubba got his, I think it was a third or fourth place in Indy a couple of years ago, it was last year, you're right. So when he ran that well at Indy, he actually had a brand new car that itself was, it was above and beyond. But the week prior, he had a fairly older car, a car he could not really, I don't want to say he couldn't control, but it was just so much, you know, wear and tear over the years with that chassis that it just wouldn't do well. And I think, especially going to a road course for them, they're not going to bring brand new chassis because of the fact that it's a little more, you know, Bubba's a decent road course racer. I'll say it like that. But unfortunately for him is that they're not one to risk possibly destroying a car, because we've seen speeds get upwards of 180 at tracks like that, and destroying a car for one race, it just wouldn't be worth it for them. So
no,
if you get him the right,
not worth it.
Yeah, well, and that's what I'm thinking is, you know, now he's getting more sponsorship. He's landing these bigger deals. If he does stay and he gets percentage points ownership of Penske Motorsports, I definitely feel that he could definitely get up there to even contend and get that 43 back into victory lane.
And what a story it would be to kind of have, you know, the king, one of the most interesting prospects, up-and-coming talent in the garage area. You know, with everything going on in the world, it would just be a good story. And just, I would love to see Richard Petty get back to the pinnacle of stock car racing. He's done so much for the sport, been such a staple, and I want to see him, you know, get what the Wood Brothers have gotten the last couple of years. You know, that chance to make a run at the championship, make a run at wins week in and week out. And I really feel like Bubba Wallace is the driver that can get him there. They're starting to show, you know, they can really work as a team. They've got a lot of growth and potential still left to come. And I just keep hoping the best for them.
Very true. I'll run down the quick finishing order, and we will go from there. So, again, winner, Chase Elliott's winning. Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., Jimmy Johnson, Chris Buescher, top five. Clint Boyer, Kaz Grala, again, great run in his debut. William Byron, Joey Logano, my guy, Michael McDowell, with the top 10. Oh, man, I was so pissed when he Eric Jones, Alex Bowman, Brad Keselowski, Kurt Busch, Matt DiBenedetto, top 15. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Kevin Harvick, Tyler Reddick, Ryan Newman, and Ty Dillon, your top 20. Christopher Bell, Cole Custer, Ryan Preece, and Eric Almirola, along with Bubba Wallace, your top 25. Matt Kenseth, Daniel Suarez, Brendan Poole, Timmy Hill, and James Davison finish your top 30. Ryan Blaney, Corey LaJoy, Quinn Hoff, J.J. Yaley, and John Hunter Nemechek, your top 35. Garrett Smithley, Kyle Busch, Stanton Barrett, and Brendan Gaughan, your top 39. And one thing with Kyle's wreck, holy cow, did that car get just clobbered.
Which wreck?
Kyle.
Busch?
Yeah. Did you not see him wreck?
I mean, I saw where his two back wheels blew out, but it didn't seem like it was a bad wreck.
Well, I mean, he kind of pancaked the right-hand side. When he lost that tire, he just spun it around and slapped the wall pretty hard going into the chicane on the backstretch. Unless I've been drinking again, which is a possibility. But it's a possibility at this point. But I'm excited. Dover, we have a doubleheader, and they did have to alter it. So now we have twin 3:11 races, which aren't that long. The Dryden 3:11, both of them 4 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday on NSNBC. And I don't know how much I'm really looking for, but I'm not sure how to really feel about them being identical sizes.
I mean, I think it works. Honestly, I'm excited because Dover can be a really interesting track, but sometimes those races can really drag on and get really boring. So I feel like shortening is just going to amp up the excitement and really dial up, you know, the intensity level, which is always a good thing when it comes to the tricky 1 mile concrete Thunderdome, as it really, really is. And
Thunderdome. Sorry.
And honestly, it'll be really interesting because you'll get a true side-by-side comparison. It'll be the exact distance, run about the same time of day. So it'll be a really interesting comparison to see which drivers and teams excel both days and which drivers and teams maybe are good one day and piss poor the next day.
That is true. So I'm going to be very excited for it. Now, one thing I do want to ask you real quick is on the new qualifying setting order. Have you looked much into it?
I have looked into it. I like that they're going to try and, you know, add a little bit more of a formulaic, reasoning behind it rather than being a super random draw, especially with the playoffs coming up. That was something that completely didn't even cross my radar when thinking about it. That would be really, really shitty to go into a playoff race, especially the championship finale race, and have your entire fate decided by the luck of a draw where you're going to start to begin your quest for a championship. So I'm glad that they've got a little bit more of a performance influence into it, you know, and they've got, I think, the right categories weighted correctly as to what their importance is. So I'm a big favor of this kind of concocted way of starting the field as opposed to what we've been doing.
I am too. So can't wait to see. We got all three series, including the ARCA series, running there at Dover this weekend. So it shall be interesting to see what all we will see, how treacherous it will be, and see how much we're going to like. I already do like the shorter races, but it's going to be interesting having identical races ran one after another.
Exactly. Now, I'm looking forward to it. Plus, you know, we're getting right down to it. We just got this doubleheader weekend at Dover, and then we've got the Daytona race, you know, in a couple, 2 weeks after that, and then we're on to the playoffs, baby. It's here. We're, you know, through hell and high water and COVID and Mother Nature trying to stop us at every corner, we've almost got a full season in, buddies.
Man, if you would have told me about that, I would be shocked.
And, guys, the British lady has almost called it a night. So, look, thanks for a great evening of the Charlotte Lion. We'll be back next week, won't we? Will we?
As far as I know.
Good. As long as Armageddon doesn't hit, we'll be back.
As long as I get to wear pants.
Hey, you can wear pants. Okay. Brady, you can wear pants too. I'm just going to sit here and drink my diet drinks. You guys take care. See you next week on the Charlotte Line. Do your survey. Do your survey. I left you a message. Bye.
Wait, what? Did I miss something on that one?